getting that time of year where it's uncomfortably hot. I know we've got a cool down coming, but I was riding yesterday, and even up at like Snowbird, it is hot outside. Like, we're to the point where I'm trying not to ride between 12 and 4. Because unless you're really high up, it's brutally hot. And like this week, going to get over 100 this week before we have our cool down. So, which I'm kind of segueing you to earlier. We have other stuff to get into. I might hop back into that in just a sec.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about heat training today.
So, I mean, you guys see the title, right? Unless I call it some nonsense that makes no sense. We did have Dirty Dino yesterday, which is a huge...
That event's getting really popular. It's getting really big. I need to do it next year. I had a family reunion. I went to Lagoon for the first time in like 20 years.
How was that?
It was actually kind of fun, except I was like scared of the rides. Like,
it is funny because I wasn't able to make it, and I was riding down Tanner's yesterday, and it struck me. I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of glad I didn't go. I'm kind of afraid of roller coasters, and I'm like riding down Tanner on an Epic, and I was like, this should be scarier, but I guess it's just, you know, familiarity.
It just does weird things to my stomach and my internal organs, and it's uncomfortable. And
there you go. So, I don't know.
But it was fun.
Do other stuff. Hey, quick plug, do other stuff. If you're listening to this podcast, you know, people who are way too into bikes are like disproportionately represented in the listeners of this podcast. Don't do less bikes, but do like, you know, go to your school dances, play some laser tag, do some, you know, do some kid stuff. Like, you guys, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably like being slightly too responsible for your age. Have a little bit of fun.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I actually snuck in a ride before and after I went, but that's kind of sad, so.
There you go. Dirty Dino, though, had some cool results. We had Riker was second or third? I had my notes.
Yeah, second or third.
Riker, again, on the podium. Riker's having a pretty killer season.
He's killing it all over the place.
Kind of killing it. Holy smokes. And then we had Zoe and Fisher.
Yeah, Zoe and Fisher Riddell were on the podium. I think Zoe won the...
Zoe won. Yeah. Fisher, her local race.
Yeah.
Cool stuff. Cool. Again, not surprising, but I was really cool to see. Potentially others too, but
yeah, I know a bunch of people were down there. I haven't looked at the results or anything.
We're actually kind of time crunched on this episode. So, if we, as always, no one's ever taken us up on this. If we forget to mention you, please let us know.
Well, and also, you know, if you're aware of something cool that you're like, we'll shout anybody out for anything, you know,
try us. We'll shout anybody out for anything. Okay.
But you know, if your kid's done something cool at a race and we're not aware of it, let us know.
Please let us know. This team is just getting so big and has like, and I've realized with our post Nike rides, which I'm gonna talk about in just a sec. It's just kind of like, so many people have been involved with this team now. It's probably in the thousands of people who have had something to do with Maybird pretty directly. So if something gets lost in the shuffle, we care. You might just have to let us know. This is not a 20-person team anymore. So on that note, we had our first post-Nike ride on Thursday. It was a party. We realized that not all these people are on Team Snap anymore. So I was expecting like 7 people and we had like 20. it was really, really fun. I will be doing another one on Thursday. I'm going to put these up on Instagram too, so that people who don't have Team Snap can see them. Location and time TBD, but it'll be between 5, 6-ish. We'll try to, I have some fun stuff in mind, but I want to think about it a little bit more before we schedule it, but please come. Depending on how many people come to these, I know the first one, we might have a disproportionately sized turnout. Depending on how many people show up and who shows up, we'll split it up. This is explicitly to be fun though. Fun rides are sometimes hard depending on who shows up and what the vibe is.
We
but
do
like,
need more girls to come to them.
We do need more girls. I wanted to say,
so it's like Piper, if you're listening, you should probably go
100%. Yeah. Like, yeah, the emphasis is to have fun. And like, if you're talking to someone who's like, oh, I haven't ridden in a year, I don't know, like, that's not what this is about. You'll be fine. We're here to have fun. So that will be at least a semi-regular thing. Missoula this weekend.
Yeah, we've got a big group going out to Missoula where the team's taking a group out and it's actually filling 2 pretty big vehicles, and then a bunch of families are traveling out there as well.
Missoula really is kind of the fan favorite travel race of
Maybird. Yeah, it's kind of a big deal for us, so super excited. It's going to be beautiful there, so be fun.
cycling world news, Pogacar absolutely blew up the Dauphiné. Looks like he's on track for another tour win unless something changes. I'm kind of, as much as I'm a Poggy fan, I'm really rooting for Vingo and Remco to make him work for it. We'll see how that goes.
I'm actually going to talk about Remco.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Do you know he has like the most aerodynamic body Specialized has ever tested?
Oh, really?
Yeah, they say with any other...
They haven't tested mine yet.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be aerodynamic compared to what, like a Tahoe? Anyway, no, apparently he's the only rider where the shorter his sleeves are on his time trial suit, the faster he is. Oh. I guess with every other rider they've ever tested, the longer their sleeves, the quicker.
Okay.
So Remco's got some magic going on there. But segue you again. Heat training.
Yeah.
It's hot. I think I probably sweated 20 pounds of water yesterday between my two rides. I am feeling like I'm back into the kind of, like, I don't know, you kind of have those first few rides in the heat where you just feel like death. I was actually riding with Andrew yesterday. And I was like, I kind of enjoy riding in the heat. You know, like you have to be a little, you know, I feel like you're a little more prone to blow up. You got to watch your hydration. But I don't mind it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm kind of adapted. I'm back into the swing of summer riding.
Well, and lots of people hate it.
Yeah.
So if you can get to the point where you don't mind it, that's a huge advantage. But yeah, like heat training, it is getting warmer. It seems like this spring it kind of went from like a fairly cooler spring.
Yeah.
To like hot all of a sudden.
Yeah, we really went from like in the span of 3 weeks, we went from, ooh, a little chilly, do I pack arm warmers, to like 3 days of really ideal weather to feeling like we're a block away from the sun.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's only going to get worse this week before we have a little bit of a cool down.
Yeah, and I think there's kind of a tendency, which I totally get, to avoid riding in the heat. You know, like I know like Corner Canyon does their rides in the morning super early before school, well, I guess not school, but before, mm-hmm. just before people go to work and stuff, really early. It's really nice and cool then.
Late in the evening. I did a lot of night riding during the summer when I was in college. Mm-hmm. Like I would finish rides at midnight, which mm-hmm. isn't great. Wouldn't recommend it, but
yeah. Like I know Skyline does almost all of their rides at different locations in Park City just to avoid the heat.
And we want to throw out, this is not a bad idea.
No, it's not bad.
You know, like we don't want you to go out and do like a 3 hour VO2 session at 3 o'clock PM in Corner Canyon.
Exactly. You can totally smell
your hair burning while you're riding.
like last summer it got really hot and I would just go downstairs. Our basement's super cool. I mean, cool as in cold.
It's actually super dorky. We've got like race plates and like an exercise ball that's never been used. It's great.
But I come down in Zwift in the middle of July just because it was cooler and more pleasant for me. But yeah, so we do kind of have that tendency to avoid the heat, and sometimes that's good, but sometimes it does need to be embraced, and we'll kind of talk about that. And other times it's just like, you don't get to choose. You have to race when it's hot and you need to be ready.
I was going to throw out, if Nika is one of your goals, I have some bad news about Nika racing in Utah. I mean, of all the Nike races you've ever participated in, I can think of like three or four where it was cool or cold. Yeah, the rest
maybe
are
if
just
you're like junior Devo in the race at 7 a.m, then it's pretty nice.
Or we had that one at Snow Basin years ago, or like some, you know, but like generally speaking, these races and more as it gets bigger and bigger are at low lying.
Yeah. They're more in like Richfield and Gunnison and Panguitch and all these towns I need to probably visit, but Yeah. So, you know, sometimes you need to avoid the heat. There's times that it's better to avoid the heat, and we'll talk about that. Other times it really needs to be embraced. And I hope people pick up on that there needs to be kind of reason and moderation and all these things, because like it was funny. We did this podcast on heat training. I think we did one last year, maybe the year before. Miles Baker was with me, and I had Amy down here with us, my daughter. It's probably the only podcast she's ever listened to. We talked about heat training. The rest of her season, she would only ride outside in the heat. You know, I'm like,
She actually took something from it.
It's not the only training principle, but it is a training principle. But it definitely has to be done within reason. And so there are two main reasons that you would want to incorporate heat training into what you do. And the first one is just maintaining the ability to perform and delay fatigue when you're riding when it's hot, riding or racing when it's hot. That's kind of the first one. You develop these adaptations that make it so you're better equipped to handle the heat. That's the first one and super important. The second one is it also provides kind of an additional bonus training stimulus that is really pretty cool, actually.
I heard a lot of pros were doing heat training leading up to Unbound. There were a bunch of memes about it. It's kind of like a new fashionable thing to do for pros.
It kind of is. And I've heard it kind of called like poor man's altitude training. Has very similar benefits. And it's a lot easier to do, a lot less expensive. Like anyone can do it kind of regardless of where you live or how much money you make and so forth. So it is something that's really cool. And it's, and you know, we always talk about like whether the things we talk about are marginal gains versus major gains. This definitely falls into the major gains category. It's a really, really beneficial topic to discuss. So we should actually do something once that's totally marginal and not that important.
What I want to say too, like riding more is the biggest gain. This isn't maybe as big a gain as like ride 4 days a week instead of one, right? Like this is maybe truly kind of like the medium gains category. I don't know. Like marginal gains are kind of like, I don't know, like
Aero socks. No offense.
Miles. No, it's you know, like, or like picking the best mattress. I don't know. Like, but this is a relatively biggish sort
when we
of
go
deal.
Over some of the percent. Yeah. I mean, obviously riding more is the biggest gain. I'd say this is up there.
This is a surprisingly big deal.
So those are the two main reasons we're going to talk about heat training, but let's just talk about efficiency first.
Okay.
We talk about efficiency all the time. I don't know if we really always use the term correctly, but really, so we use we primarily use carbohydrates as fuel, right? When we're exercising and we're converting those carbohydrates into energy, into mechanical energy, only about 20 to 30% of the overall energy is converted into mechanical energy or into power, we'll say. So out of all that energy we're creating, only about 20% of it goes to the pedals, basically.
Now, this is similar to like an internal combustion engine in your car. They're actually shockingly inefficient for the amount of, like you take the amount of energy in a gallon of gasoline and then you send that gallon through the engine. I don't remember the number, but it's well under 50%, and the rest is converted into heat. And sound, especially heat. And this is like, you know, like advocates for electric cars will point out that that's 100% efficient, where internal combustion is less efficient. So our body's kind of like this internal combustion engine where you're taking a set amount of energy, but we're only getting 20 to 30% of that, you know, down to the pedals, right?
Like 70 to 80% of that just turns into heat. We convert that into heat.
And I do have a question too. I'm curious on this. Is part of the reason that like your body has to operate in a very narrow temperature, like your body's to stay in homeostasis and to stay alive, you can't have like, you know, your body can't operate at 110 degrees, right?
Yeah.
Really. And so it takes work to like cooling your body, like cooling a car, like running your air conditioning takes energy, right?
Yeah. It's amazing the tight window that our body is capable of operating in. And it's amazing the system it has of keeping the core temperature, all our vital organs at roughly that temperature.
Like 5 degrees in either direction makes you extremely sick, and 10 degrees in either direction is dead, right?
Yeah. And so as we exercise, like this heat that we're creating, it, you know, it goes throughout our blood and it increases our core temperature, and the environment that our body's in, you know, and basically it circulates through our system, and the blood will get close to the skin, and then it'll, like, you know, when we sweat, it'll cool it down and so forth. But the environment that our body is in will determine whether that heat is trapped or dissipated. So like if you're in like a swimming pool, like a cold swimming pool, that heat's just going to dissipate. If you're outside and you're wearing a down puffy, that heat's going to be trapped. And so, you know, but we're like our body when we're creating energy is creating heat, And it's like our environment that kind of determines whether that heat's going to dissipate or be trapped. So if we're able to improve this efficiency just a little bit, and we can only improve it just a little bit, you know, that 20 to 30% that we're talking about. If we're able to improve it, we're going to be able to convert more energy into mechanical work and generate less heat. And this is good because we're going to be able to be more fatigue resistant, and we're going to actually have less competition with our blood that goes to our skin, and more would remain within our working muscles. So being able to improve efficiency through being able to regulate our temperatures, you know, pretty big deal. So we were just kind of mentioning that our bodies operate in this really small window that's kind of acceptable. And we've talked about this before. We talked about it during our hydration podcast that we just recently had. But as we sweat, that sweat cools our skin through, you know, because it evaporates.
Evaporative cooling, yeah. Right.
And the blood vessels near our skin, near the surface of our skin, they dilate. And this draws blood from, you know, from the working muscles towards the surface of the skin. So as our body creates the heat, the blood pumps that heat towards the surface of our skin. The sweat cools the surface of the skin, which cools that blood, which returns back to the muscles.
And remember, blood, we want as much blood in the muscles as possible for performance sake. So anything that's drawing blood out of your muscles to have to perform other functions from a performance standpoint is not desirable, right?
That, or you just need enough blood to be able to do both, is probably part of it. But it's kind of just like a car's radiator system, you know, where you've got like the fluid that goes into the engine. It absorbs the heat, goes to the radiator, it cools it down, it sends it back into the engine. And it's a pretty, pretty cool system for maintaining that really delicate homeostasis body temperature that we need to operate at. So when, heat strain, and that's when we kind of outpace our body's internal cooling mechanism, and our core temperature begins to increase. And basically when this happens, we are exercising with a fever.
Yeah. It's like, if you imagine yourself, like if you were going to go on a Zwift ride inside a preheating oven, at a certain point, your body can't keep up with that, right? Like if you're working really hard, you're creating heat, your environment's really hot. Like your body's not magic. You can't survive in a 500 degree oven.
Yeah.
Right. And in the same way, like if you are, you know, if it's 102 outside and you're in the middle of a race, like your body can only keep up to a certain point. Right.
Yeah. And so when our internal core temperature increases, two things are going to happen. The first thing is performance loss.
Yep.
And this is kind of in it. So basically, for every temperature that you go above normal, equates to about...
Every degree.
What
you said, for every temperature you go above. So you go up a Fahrenheit, then you go up a Celsius, then you go up a Kelvin.
Okay. For every degree your internal body temperature goes up, that equates to about a 5% decrease in performance.
That's big.
That's big. And obviously that's not linear. But it is a pretty significant draw on our performance if our core body temperature is increasing. So that's a big deal. So that's the first thing that happens when we experience heat strain. The second thing that happens is it signals heat adaptation.
No. Stick the landing. You got it.
You back up a sec.
Nope.
Heat adaptation.
That one's easy. I'm not going to give you two shots on that. It's okay.
So that's the second one, is it signals heat adaptation. So for some reason, I want to say adaption and
nope.
Not adaptation.
But that would be wrong.
It would
that's
be
not
easier to say it that way.
That there's is like, true, yes.
There's like more letters and stuff.
Yeah, if you just mumble stuff and assume that we get it, that's even easier than that.
Okay. So yeah, let's talk about heat adaptation. So continued exposure to heat over a relatively short period of time can do several things. One of them, it's going to increase our baseline plasma volume levels.
Good stuff.
Yeah, that's good stuff, which makes it so we can maintain stroke volume and also sweat and all that
More oxygen in our blood.
Well, that's kind of ish.
Am I wrong? I'm wrong. Carry on.
Yeah, a little bit. No, we'll get to that, though. It also improves our endothelial function, which is kind of like when we talked about nitric oxide before and how...
How did you say endothelial right, but you couldn't do adaptation?
I just was warmed up, I guess.
Ah. Ha ha, clever.
So,
don't you dare say pun intended. There's no way you're smart enough that you came up with that.
So it kind of has, basically it makes it so nitric oxide is more bioavailable in our body. And we've talked about that before when we talk about like beetroot juice and, you know, as we increase nitric oxide, it causes vasodilation. And that's something that heat training does as well. So yeah, it's going to improve blood pressure and improve circulation throughout the body, which is a pretty big deal. You know, people take drugs to do that.
I say, a lot of times we also come up, like we talk about a thing where like people dope to get this, right?
Oh, that, yeah, like, just wait.
Yeah. Like this better. Is, and like, this no. is, you know, it would basically, when pros max all this out, they're doing drugs to get more of this. So
this is basically doping. Just hang on a sec.
Yeah.
Yeah. It also, some of the adaptations are we start to sweat sooner and we start to sweat more and also sweat more evenly.
Hmm.
Like you're not just shooting it out of your pits. You're like, your arms will be covered with sweat. Your legs will be covered with sweat.
I have noticed that I sweat more readily than other people.
Which is good.
Which you'd think would be a sign that you're out of shape. Is kind of the immediately intuitive.
Being able to sweat a lot is a good adaptation.
Okay, because I was noticing this the other day. I was like, I was at the shop and it was kind of hot and I'm like, I'm sweating a ton. And like, I'm like, am I like really out of shape? Like, so that's actually
good.
Depends
on the context, I guess. If you're just walking around the shop, maybe, but. If you're out on a bike ride and it's hot and uncomfortable and you have this glaze of sweat all over you, that's a really good thing.
Hmm. Okay.
You know, so, so you sweat more and sooner. And this is an interesting one too, is the more adapted you are to the heat, the less sodium you lose in your sweat.
Okay.
Which kind of explains why a lot of people that cramp tend to cramp more in the beginning, early season than they do later in the season. Because maybe they're not as heat adapted.
They're not as heat adapted, which means they're losing more salt.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and there's probably more, but just know that there's a lot of cool things that are going to happen as you heat adapt. Now, and this happens relatively quickly. This can happen in 2 to 3 weeks. If you maintain it for a longer period of time. So what happens is like, your blood volume has increased, and that's mostly plasma, which is basically water, which makes your blood more dilute. So you don't have as many red blood cells.
Per unit of blood.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So your blood's more dilute. And that signals the kidneys to produce EPO.
Aha.
There we go.
For those of you who aren't like a little younger, like Lance Armstrong and EPO. Actually, it's kind of a misconception because I feel like most of what he was doing was blood doping, which is different. But EPO is kind of like the drug that even people who aren't in cycling still associate with cycling doping because everyone was shooting themselves full of it from World War II to the 90s, right? Like for a long, long time. Erythropoietin,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Hey, look at Good that. Job, I yeah. sounded smart there. I'm going to cut out the hesitation before so it makes me sound even smarter. But... that is a thing that your body naturally produces and that when you're doping, you're taking supplemental EPO, mm-hmm. right?
But by heat training and by having that excess plasma volume, eventually, so it signals the kidneys to produce EPO, which signals the production of more red blood cells.
Harry Potter just to dope. I don't know. That was dumb. Sorry. That was stupid.
Move that was actually on. Kind of funny. Oh, yeah. To fill up that space. So the concentration of red blood cells is correct. So yeah, and that's the same, something similar happens when you go to altitude training. People do that to increase their red blood cell count and heat training can do that. And that's why, you know, it's not something you just want to do for like 2 or 3 weeks. It's something that you want to probably just maintain as much as you can.
And I feel like that's not that hard to do. Like, you're going to end up riding in relatively hot temperatures, even if you're up in Park City. Like, it's hot. You're going to end up doing rides where you're hot a lot of the time.
Unless you avoid it too much. And that's kind of what we're... Yeah, and we'll kind of talk about, like, the practical way to do it, but basically, you're right. You know, it's something that's not...
Most of us are just going to kind of end up doing...
I think so. Unless you actively avoid heat to an excessive amount.
Honestly, like, through July and August, unless you're up, like, at the kind of 10,000-foot mark, it's pretty hot, right? Yeah. Like, this is kind of... It would be kind of difficult to... I'm curious, too. Is this like, the more you do it in intensity and duration?
It's a Goldilocks thing.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we should throw out really quick, because we haven't yet. Heat can be dangerous too. Everybody heard this in Boy Scouts and stuff, or the first time you played soccer, and they teach you every coach, you know, like, there's heat exhaustion and there's heat stroke, and, like, those are genuine scary things. We don't seem to run into those very much, but do not, like, don't go out and, like,
absolutely, and because there is a point where you overdo it and it becomes counterproductive for sure.
Yeah, and so, like, please don't
Yeah, counterproductive, like, if not dangerous.
Yeah, so, like, there is a dangerous element to this. Yeah,
there's the Goldilocks principle.
Do want to give that disclaimer because we haven't already.
Yeah, so
some overly eager 14-year-old is going to go out and,
like, Amy.
Exactly. Yeah,
the sun all the time. That's her only ride was in the middle of the day. But, So that's probably one of the biggest benefits of heat training is it's really interesting because, like, it can actually have similar aerobic benefits that you get from actually training. And so like someone that's got a sauna could just go do that instead of exercise and still get a lot of benefits.
Because I don't know if someone else who said, like, to heat adapt, you just have to be in the heat. You don't even have to necessarily, like, do a ride in the heat. Right?
Yeah. You just need to be in the heat, but it has to affect your core temperature to a certain point that it would cause adaptations. And exercising can get you to that point quicker.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, but yeah, and yeah, we'll talk about the saunas in just a second. But, you know, we've talked before about, like, noob gains. Or you know how, like a lot of riders, they don't really ride much over the winter. And it takes them, but it only takes them about a month once they start riding to get where they feel kind of fast. Most of those adaptations are blood related.
Oh, okay.
You know, as they start exercising more, you know, they get more, their plasma volume levels improve and then they start developing more red blood cells. Like when people start doing, like, VO2 max intervals and so forth, a lot of those quick benefits that they get are
blood benefits. So the blood benefits kind of come and go quickly and your body isn't going to maintain them if you're not using them.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but they're super important. And if you want to be fast, they're really nice to have on board. So, let's see.
And I should throw out too, while you're getting your notes, Dan just gave me a thumbs up, like, great, let me find where I'm at. I mentioned blood doping earlier, and that kind of in that same vein, get it? Because veins carry blood. no, like a lot of what Lance Armstrong was doing, and a lot of the guys was blood doping, and this is a little gross, but basically you're giving yourself blood transfusions, right? So they would take out a lot of their blood and then they would store it in, like, coolers in the team bus and then re-inject, because, like, EPO is like a substance, you can test for it, right? Like, if I put EPO into my body and you drug tested me for EPO, it would chuck up a positive for EPO, right? But blood doping is kind of brilliant because it's just your blood, right? Okay. So the way that they do this now, to my understanding, and please to, like, the million doctors who listen to this for some reason, please, like, we'll issue a correction if we need to, but they have the biological passport. So they take a baseline reading of, like, how many red blood cells you have. And then if you kind of are suddenly way out of that range, then that is some evidence.
Heat training
or you've got, you know, like, blood bags in your team bus, which is gross and bad. It makes this sport really awful until, you know, Nika, like, literally until Nika kind of brought American cycling out of the Lance Armstrong induced funk. And I'll say really quick, his podcast is kind of interesting. I don't have good feelings about Lance Armstrong, and I kind of don't think you should either, because he did irreparable damage to our sport and is a jerk. Funny enough, do you know how he's not bankrupt? Because his main sponsor was the U.S. government. Like, they sued him because U.S. Postal, right? The government sued him for every penny that they gave to that team. He was one of the first investors in Uber.
Oh.
So he lives in Aspen. He's got buku bucks that have nothing to do with cycling.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but he's a jerk. Hey, I don't think he's a good dude. Like, if you actually read up, and people like to, like, oh, everyone was doping. I'm like, yeah, but he kind of had this, like, doping empire, like, and sports empire, and was, like, friends with the president and would, like, ruin people's lives when they tried to, like, do something about it. Like, I don't know. We can have different feelings on this.
The doping mafia.
Kinda. Yeah. He's not, I don't know. There's a lot of, like, and like peace and love. Like, it's a lot of people of a certain age for whom he was a hero, and like, gotcha. They defend him and he gets sponsorships and stuff still. He really messed up cycling for Americans for a long, long time.
Well, anyway, heat training.
Are you back with your notes?
I was listening.
Oh, really? I'm just kind of spitting out hot air while you.
I was looking. That's what, like, we had eye contact that whole time.
Yeah, I just don't. I'm not considerate in thinking about other people. Anyway, I'm going to stop my train now.
Okay, so also with heat training, I just want to throw out there, like, the heat shock proteins that you kind of hear about.
Hang on. Just a sec. Let's hit the brakes. So you said, like, the heat shock proteins that you kind of hear, like who kind of hears about? Let's do a poll. How many of you ever just, like, heard, like, you threw that out as if it was, like, you were saying, like cabbage, like a concept we're all familiar with. Like, we've all heard of cabbage. We've all heard of heat shock. I'm going to push back again. No one has heard of heat shock proteins.
Okay, so
tell me if I'm wrong. Tell you what, that'll be our secret word this week is say yes or no. Yes is, well, yes, I've heard of heat shock proteins.
Like influencers throw the term around a lot.
No, you don't. That's my point. What influencers are you watching? Are you an influencer if four people listen to you?
Okay, so anyhow, these are just proteins that are produced in response to heat.
Okay.
That they help our cells be more resistant to negative effects of heat.
Brand new information to me, but okay.
Because like when an egg gets cooked and it turns white,
yep,
that's proteins changing.
Right.
You know, our proteins in our body become more resistant.
This is why when an egg cools down, it's still a cooked egg versus a raw egg.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're more resistant to changing because of heat, basically.
Got it.
And then there's also kind of like an antioxidant effect and so forth. So it's like other good, like a lot of people list these as the reason to use sauna training and so forth. It's just more good reasons to do it.
Sure.
So just wanted to throw that out there. So let's talk about kind of how to do it. So how to do it, there's two different ways to heat train. One's passive and the other is active. I almost said aggressive.
Aggressive heat training. Is that when you like put on like you're like you put on your puffy downstairs? Okay, well there you go. All right. This is when you go and ride into the sun.
Okay, so passive heat training, and this is like your saunas and your hot tubs and whatever. And I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I don't really know too many people on the team that have saunas. I think Rocky might. So become friends with Rocky, maybe.
There you go. I hate saunas. I've done sauna like twice in my life, and I hated both experiences. I don't think it's a good time, but
yeah. So yeah, saunas are actually pretty cool. And if I had all the money, I'd really like to get one.
Yeah, I do it as a training thing. People who do it as like a relaxing thing, I don't. I run hot already. I like to be cold. I love my chili pad. Not sponsored.
Yeah. So saunas. So like in a traditional sauna, you know, you set the temperature to between like 160, 180 degrees. They kind of say that's like the ideal.
Yep.
An infrared sauna is lower. It's more like 120, 140-ish degrees. It's lower because those kind of like the heat heats you up rather than the air itself.
Than the environment. Oh, yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
And they recommend doing that like about four times a week for about 30 minutes a session is kind of what you would need to do to really get that benefit. Saunas are nice because you can really control the temperature.
Yep.
And you can control the environment. I mean, you couldn't just do this in like a hot car because it'd be the right temperature for like 5 minutes and
yeah,
you know, it'd be too cool.
Please don't go sit out in a hot car.
Yeah.
Can you do this in a shower?
I wouldn't say a shower, but you can do it in a hot tub.
Like a shower wouldn't get hot and not, you'd be like scalding your skin by the time.
A shower would get hot enough.
Like a shower couldn't heat your environment enough. It would mostly just burn your skin,
and
right?
Ultimately, like the sauna has to heat you up enough that it's affecting your core temperature.
How hot is a hot tub?
aren't they like 105 degrees? Or
like
something?
So, a hot tub's not hot enough, basically.
No, a hot tub is like you can get similar effects in a hot tub. I don't really know how hot. I've never had a hot.
So what? Hot tub versus sauna?
I don't know which is better.
Gosh, I think you're supposed to be the expert.
I don't have either. Like that's why I said I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on the past.
Because you only have a hot car. We have Andrew's room upstairs. You ever go into that?
Yeah, my bedroom's pretty hot. Like our basement's freezing cold.
I love sleeping down here. It's pitch black and it's freezing cold.
That's why I Zwift down here so much in the summer. It's so cold down here. My bedroom's so hot. Like, I don't know. But
anyway.
Yeah, that's neither of those are a hot tub. So yes, and the reason that passive heat training is good is because it limits the stress.
Okay.
You know, because you know, when you're trying to do it actively, you're combining stress with stress.
Right.
That can be kind of dangerous.
You're riding in the heat, not just being in the heat. Yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of the good. And the nice thing too about if you have passive heat training available, it's just like another option to kind of add on to your whatever training you're doing. You know,
right.
Just as kind of supplement. So,
right.
But it's not necessary. You can heat adapt other ways. And we're going to talk about the active ways, which is probably how most of us are going to do it. Because I think, you know, like we have a membership to our local gym, but I don't think it's going to be worth it for me to drive 15 minutes over the gym to sit in the sauna for 30 minutes and then drive 15 minutes back. You know, I think there's probably better ways I could spend my somewhat limited time.
Yeah.
So active, we mentioned before, you know, like some of the high school teams, like they'll only practice in the morning. You know, Skyline only practices up in Park City where it's cooler. Sometimes you got to embrace the heat. But an important principle just to keep in mind is don't overdo it.
Yep.
There's got to be the Goldilocks thing going on here. So because training's stressful, heat's stressful, and if you're combining the two, it might be too much. So you got to do it prudently.
So let's say it is 90. So if you're speaking to Nike coaches here, giving your advice, it's going to be 95 degrees. High school ride's going to be at 5, 6 p.m. It's pretty hot. Do you go to Corner Canyon and then ride easy? Is it you go to Corner Canyon and ride hard? If you're going to do interval work, are you going to do that higher up where it's not as hot?
You kind of do one or the other.
Okay.
And it's kind of like interval work where kind of the rule with interval training is, you know, you live high, train low.
Yeah.
You know, you don't really want to do your intervals at really, really high elevations because they're done at poor quality.
Right.
Without a lot of oxygen.
But I guess unless it is that hot in the valley, do you think coaches should be run? Is it bad to run intervals in late July down in the valley in the afternoon? Is that kind of too much?
That's not ideal either. Yeah.
Okay.
Because then and that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, also with intervals, you want to do them when they're cool. Like you don't want to do intervals in 95 degrees.
So like ideally it would be intervals at low elevation when it's cool, but
exactly.
If you can't do that, you're saying coaches be running your intervals up high, but then if you were going to do a less intense ride, maybe do some of those down low.
So the ideal, and you'll have to figure out how to get to as close to the ideal as possible, is if you're doing intervals or hard workouts, you want to do those in ideal conditions.
Okay.
You know, your hard key workouts should be done in ideal conditions, meaning not super, and by high elevation, I'm talking, you don't want to go like to Alta to do these.
Okay.
You know, Park City's fine. But you also don't want to like do your intervals in 95 degrees, even if it's race specific or whatever, because you're not getting the full benefits from doing those. But also because like doing exercise that's that intense is super stressful, and being in the heat
is just being outside when it's that hot makes me tired. Stressful. Right. Yeah. Okay.
You know, so you're just adding stress on stress, which might be too much.
Okay.
And it's going to make for crappy quality intervals. You know, if the intention of the ride's to be a hard ride, it's going to be a weak ride that feels hard.
So does this kind of mean that the reality is like you might, because I'm thinking about race day where you might just have to race at 3 p.m. and it might just be 95 degrees and it's going to be intense.
Well, we'll get to how to deal with that. But so as far as like passive heat training goes, you kind of have like the neat and tidy internet recommendation, which we'll talk about that first. And then we'll talk about kind of a little more practically how you would do it. So usually kind of what the internet would recommend is for about 2 or 3 weeks, you do moderate riding, which is kind of zone 2, zone 3 at most, outside when it's uncomfortably hot for about 60 to 90 minutes. And you want to do that, I said, about 3 times a week, probably. And, probably 4 times a week for about 2 or 3 weeks. And you want to be just uncomfortable enough that you're getting really sweaty, and then you probably know it's effective. And I think uncomfortable is probably the key there, you know. So that's kind of how that's kind of what the common recommendation is, you know, doing that for 2 to 3 weeks. I don't think anyone's going to take 2 to 3 weeks out of whatever they're doing training wise right now just to go do that for 2 to 3 weeks. So I think kind of the more practical approach is, I would say that, so 2 to 3 times a week, we'll say 3 times a week on your 2-hour rides or so, maybe some people are doing 3-hour rides, I would try to make one of those hours be a little uncomfortable.
Heat wise. Okay.
But you're still doing kind of zone 2, kind of moderate training. You're not doing like intervals at that heat. You're doing some moderate training at an uncomfortable enough temperature that you're sweating.
Okay.
You know, which is,
I kind of sweat all the time. Like, am I good? Like, if you're sweating, is that the cue? Because if you're sweating means you're getting heat adapted, I'm getting heat adapted all the time.
It would really be more what your core temperature is.
Okay.
We'll talk about that in a second. But sweating might be a good indicator of that.
Okay.
But yeah, so, or you could do like 2 rides a day, you know, like you could do one at 10 o'clock in the morning when it's kind of uncomfortably hot, just go out and do an easy ride for an hour, come back and then, you know, go ride in Park City for 2 hours when it's nice and cool and go hammer with your friends or whatever, you know? So, but yeah, like if you're going on a 2 to 3 hour ride, you know, maybe start at like 5 o'clock and then
have that first hour
is a little miserable, but then 6 o'clock rolls around, it starts feeling better.
And or maybe you kind of start your ride at 9 o'clock and then by kind of 11 noon at the end of your ride, you're getting some low intensity heat exposure.
And I guess don't do anything too extreme, but don't go too far out of your way to avoid it.
Yeah. I'm suspicious, and you push back on this if you think I'm wrong. I think a lot of people are going to just do this already.
Oh,
just because of where we live and the time of year it is, it's
exactly
like almost unless you're going out of your way to avoid it, you're probably going to be getting a pretty healthy dose
exactly.
of this, right?
And I think we can all kind of feel that, you know, that like in August, you know, riding in like right now, like in May, riding in 85 degrees feels awful.
Yeah.
In August, riding in 85 degrees feels great.
Yeah. I was gonna say 85 is not that bad. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or so, even in St. George, I remember doing a ride where it was like 68 and I was like, felt like I was dying because I had it's February. I have zero heat adaptation. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of like embrace it when it's warm. Don't overdo it. Don't go too far out of your way to avoid ever riding in the heat. And don't try to do key hard workouts in the heat either.
All
right. Yeah. And another thing you could do too is like go on a walk when it's hot.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to, the exercising is going to get your core temperature up, which will get it to an adaptable point sooner. And being in the heat is going to help speed that up as well. So I almost made a purchase. I didn't. I kind of chickened out. I almost bought myself a Father's Day present today.
Oh.
There's a product out there I'm really intrigued about that Remco actually uses. That's why I said,
Okay. Here's our tie-in.
Yeah, there's our tie-in. And it's from a company called Core, just CORE. And it's a wearable device that supposedly can somehow measure your internal core temperature. And they kind of use like your skin temperature, your heart rate, and a few other things. And
some, they're doing math to figure out what it is.
They're kind of doing math to figure out what it is. And you also kind of wear it in a weird place, like on your side. Like,
I'm curious really quick. Just help me understand this. If I take a, you know, when you're little and your mom sticks a thermometer in your mouth to see what your temperature is, you go to the doctor or whatever. Is that not your, is that a different than
no,
your
that
core
would be
temperature?
Like your core temperature, or rectal would be core. But skin temperature can be different. Like you can have like, your skin can be really cold, but and, your core can be hot.
Okay.
You know, so skin temperature isn't.
And I guess this product exists because it's not practical to be going around with a thermometer in your mouth while you're exercising.
Or a rectal one. Or,
hey, I don't know.
No, in fact, when they do like studies in the lab on internal core temperature, they have people swallow these pills.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Which are pretty expensive, I imagine. And you probably don't want to swallow a,
I guarantee a thermometer every time. I guarantee if Contender put them on the shelves, they'd sell. Guarantee it.
So it's, yeah. And it's, and the thing about the thing about heat training is if you're intentionally trying to do some heat training and get heat adaptations and all those cool benefits and so forth, if you're training your core temperature is not high enough, you're not maximizing those adaptations. If it's too high, you're doing damage.
Yeah, you're hurting yourself, you're hurting which you yourself. Shouldn't do.
Yeah. It's counterproductive.
And this is a hard one where it's like the reason this product exists is because it's hard to put a number on that.
It is.
Right. And even if you had the number, I'd imagine the number would kind of vary for people too. So I'd say like use judgment, like, but for cyclists, like uncomfortable is also kind of a different benchmark than most people.
Exactly.
Right. So like,
and that's why I think that this would be like something worth considering spending money on. Huh. I'm considering it. And
how much
and
is it?
I still have shifter cables. I'm not like the one that goes out and buys
peasant.
Yeah. You know, but
how much is this device?
I believe they're less than $300.
So, huh. Okay. It's like, sounds like a lot of money, but then when you think how much we're spending on bike stuff all the time.
Yeah. It's like less than a power meter, but I'd get the power meter first.
Yeah.
But I guess what their system is like, You can create a screen on your Garmin or Wahoo or whatever that'll, I think they give you like, there's four different ranges and your goal, like four different zones. And if you're in zone four, that's the danger zone. And,
oh, okay.
And you're too hot. You basically have too high of a fever while you're out there riding. And that's could cause problems and could be dangerous.
That's when you get into kind of heat stroke land. Okay.
But if you're in zone three, that's kind of where they want you to target your heat training.
Is there a time in the future where people are going to have a Garmin that has their power zone and their heart rate zone and their core temperature zone and their dateability zone and their like their auto zone? Yeah. Maybe you need to buy one. And
yeah, I kind of want to buy one and try it out. I think it'd be cool.
And be the nerdiest nerd.
The only reason I didn't is they actually attach to your heart rate strap and I'm wearing a Whoop.
Oh.
So I'd have to buy a heart rate strap too.
And they have to start wearing a heart rate strap.
Yeah.
I haven't done that in a long time. I know wrist readings aren't quite as good.
I used
but
to call those training bras. Is that funny?
That is slightly funny. Right. Well done. Okay. Ha ha. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. So, and the whole concept of this, of being able to track this type of information is that way you can, like when you're doing your heat training, you can get your core body temperature high enough. But then when you're in an event, you would look at that to try to do whatever you can to keep it cool. So they say train hot, race cool is kind of their slogan or something like that. I paraphrase.
It's what I live by. Train hot, race cool.
So, cool product. I'm considering.
We have no sponsors. I want to throw that out again.
Oh yeah, like, obviously we have no sponsors.
Hey, I'll shill for. I'm game. I'm buyable for a depressingly tiny amount of money. So if you want me to plug your thing.
Okay, so let's just talk now about, you know, so you pretend you have this device.
Okay.
And you see you're running hot.
Uh oh.
What do you do about it? So we'll talk about. Let's talk about ways to reduce heat stress so that we can maintain performance. The number one way to reduce heat stress and maintain performance is number one by so much. This is way more important than all the others. And that is what we've been talking about, heat adaptation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Be heat adapted.
Be heat adapted.
Okay, we're heat adapted.
Number
what comes next?
One. That's huge, okay? Because the thing is I think people worry about all the other ones and totally neglect the most important one.
Okay.
The second one is also super crazy important, way more important than all the others. People neglect it. And can you guess what the second one is?
My breath is bated. Go inside? I don't know.
Hydration.
Oh, duh. Okay. All right. Okay. I feel dumb. Okay. Yes.
Okay. So those two, those are the ones where you're going to get the hugest gains and the hugest benefits.
You're going to die if you don't do, I guess. Well, like,
but I don't think they get enough attention. So those are the first two. Like, another one you can do, like, say you're running a little bit hot, you can lower your intensity.
Okay.
You can rest. You know, the hotter you're burning the hotter you're running the engine, the higher your core temperature is going to get. You know, like, so if you're outside and it's 95 degrees and you are doing a threshold ride, your engine's going to get hotter than if you're doing a zone 2 ride in the same temperature. I mean, that just kind of makes so much sense when you say it. So, but there's some other ways too. One that I actually really like is when you put like the ice in the stockings, shove it down your back. It gives you this constant drip of water on your back that kind of keeps your clothing wet. It keeps you wet. It's basically just kind of supplementing your sweat. I like it because it's continuous. It's not just like for one brief moment you get wet and then it dries 5 minutes later. Something that kind of
I splashed some water from the creek onto my jersey yesterday during my ride, and it was nice for 90 seconds, and then it was gone. Like, yeah. So, yeah.
So that's a good one. So the ice sock works really good. Dump bottles, they help.
We have thoughts on this. Like, quick recap, drink first. If you have already checked that box, consider a dump. Don't dump on your glasses. Yeah. Don't, you know, dump on your drivetrain.
And dump on your clothes so the clothes stay wet. If the clothes are wet, that's going to aid in evaporative cooling.
For a sec.
For a bit. You know, and it does help.
It's helpful.
And the thing is, you can do that. Like my bike has two bottle cages.
Yeah.
I'll put like one bottle that's my mix, and then I put like a bottle that's just water.
Yeah.
That I just have in case I'm either sick of drinking mix, because sometimes you get sick of drinking mix, you want to drink the water. Or that one you could use to just like, you're going up a hot climb in the middle of a Nike race.
Doesn't take a whole lot of water. Just, you know, hit your jersey.
Squirt a little water on your jersey, down your back. It's going to help. I mean, the more frequently you can squirt yourself with water, the more beneficial it's going to be, rather than just dumping one over your head in the feed zone.
Yeah.
So, because your skin temperature and your core temperature are different things, but maintaining a cooler skin temperature is going to help.
Yeah, it's only going to help.
Yeah, it's going to help lower your core temperature as that blood comes to the surface of the skin to cool down. So, So there's that. Then the other thing we need to talk about is just pre-cooling, which is really important. And
you see this at like the World Cups, are wearing the ice vests on the rotors or on the rollers.
Yeah. Ice vests, especially if you're racing somewhere that's humid, ice vests are a must.
Ice vests are pretty cheap on Amazon too.
Yeah.
Right?
I've bought a few crappy ones from Amazon just to test. I haven't found one I like, so I might actually have to get like a nicer one.
Okay.
Ice vests are great. Staying in the shade. Like, don't expose yourself to the direct sunlight while you're before the race.
This is why the pros warm up on rollers.
On
like,
rollers.
When it's not hot, I would rather, you know, if it's not hot and it's not dusty, it's not going to get my bike dirty.
Or if it's not sunny.
I much prefer to ride around, like be moving, maybe even, you know, hit the first part of the course if you can. Like at the early I Cups when it's not that hot. Like for Nike races, I do not think you should be rolling around in the dust, getting your bike dirty, baking in the sun.
That's why it's nice to be in a tent without direct sunlight hitting you. On rollers. And you know, and if there's a way to have air circulating on you, could bring a little portable battery powered fan or something. That helps a lot too. Cause airflow is big. Slushies help, cold drinks help. Just staying out of the sun before your race is, you don't want to show up to the start line with a temperature of 102, you know?
Yep.
So it's better for it to get to 102 while you're racing, not before.
Yeah.
So, and then last thing to mention is just clothing. you know, that's like with the kits that Maybridge sells, we've got kind of like our basic kit and our more advanced kit.
This is kind of the why behind the more advanced kit.
This really is. The more advanced kit is like $100 more. It's a lot more. It's about the material is about half as thick.
Yeah.
Is the basic kit. Like you pick the two up and they're like the more expensive kit, you can almost squeeze and fit in your fist, and the other one's big and you'd have to like fold it up.
It's more t-shirt adjacent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And basically as far as material goes, like the thinner is the better. The thinner they can make it, the cooler it's going to keep you. Like I have this t-shirt that I never wear because it's like a cotton t-shirt that feels like it's a quarter inch thick. I go out into the sun in that thing.
Ugh.
And I just bake.
Yeah.
And, like the first Maybird t-shirts we ever had made, they were that, like that really thick.
Oh, yeah.
You'd wear those outside and you would die. Just bake.
Yeah.
But like the black Maybird kits, like you wear those outside, they don't get that hot.
Yeah. Color probably makes some amount really of difference, make, it but it's make, not much. It's the material. Material matters. Yeah.
The color, unless it's the color, if it was like a thick t-shirt, would make a huge difference.
Look at how many Tours de France Chris Froome won wearing a black Team Sky jersey. Like if it had a big effect, they wouldn't
Team
be
Sky wouldn't have.
They wouldn't have done it. It's not color. And like here they're like, oh, I want lighter colors. And it's like, I don't really fight the battle anymore because I don't care. Like when I'm working at bike shops, but like, it's not color doesn't because people have said that before. Like, oh, why are you doing black jerseys? Cause they're hotter. I'm like, well, it's not 1950 and we know how fabric works now. So, I also want to throw out really quick, somewhat related to this. And maybe you tell me if this is really the right, like sunscreen.
Definitely.
Because I saw a bike meme that was like the different types of like tans people have, right? Where it's like the golf tan, the basketball tan, and then it was like the biker tan, which was like, you know, like half of your leg and then your arms and stuff were brown. And then it said the bike noob tan, and it was the same areas were shaded, but they were red instead. Like, sunburns aren't cool. Tans are cool, I think, because it shows that you're outside a lot. Wear sunscreen. Yeah. You know,
like getting a sunburn, just like it's going to take you longer to recover from.
Look up the stats on melanoma killing young people and you will never forget sunscreen ever again. Also, if you're spraying sunscreen, don't do it near people's bikes because it is oil that you're spraying out of a can. And if it gets on brake rotors, it's going to ruin your day. Want to throw that out too. If you're warming, you know, if you're getting ready for the Nike ride, you walk over by your friends, you know, like bike rack, you're spraying your sunscreen on, get it on the rotors. That's a no go, but wear sunscreen.
Yeah. But by far, so the clothing is important, and that's why sometimes when you pay more, you get a better product.
Yep.
But they feel thin, wispy, and if you crash in them, they
rip.
But they do keep you noticeably cooler. And they're also better at allowing like evaporation to occur too. So that's kind of it on clothing. I think we're gonna, like, as we get closer to the Nike season, we'll keep talking about pre-cooling and how to stay cooler out there. But right now, you know, if you've been avoiding the heat, you know, that's great for your intervals, but sometimes you do need to embrace it. But you need to embrace it
smartly. Yeah.
Like, don't go out and try to get your PR up Little Cottonwood when it's on the 4th of July. Like, you don't want to do that.
But maybe go ride Little Cottonwood on the 4th of July. And,
just do it in zone two.
Yeah.
You know, you don't.
If you're fit enough to climb Little Cottonwood in zone two, do that.
if you don't, your mountain bike, you can.
Yeah.
So I don't have anything else.
Good. That was mean. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, watch my impulses there. I'm actually going to hold to this. Your secret password for this week. What was it? Rapid fire proteins. What are they called again?
Heat shock proteins.
Okay. Yes or no. We're going to vote. If you've yes, of course. Heat shock proteins. Duh. You know? Okay. Like, so we're going to do some science
now. All the Instagram influencers are
texting. Yep. Mm-hmm. Texting yes indicates that, I'm very familiar with heat shock proteins and I hear about them every day. Texting no indicates that I am correct and that no one's ever heard of that before. And the fact that you kind of brushed that off as like a thing you assumed we all knew is crazy. So yes or no is your secret thing for this week.
So go ride when it's kind of hot and ride when it's cool also, but
powerful stuff, Dan, but only if you want to. Happy Father's Day.